Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now I want to move on to the readiness of South Africa's matric class of 2024 as they transition from the well-structured environment of secondary education to the often diverse and unknown challenges of the real world. And I guess the question is this cohort actually ready? Someone who has a view on that is the Dean of the Henley Business School, John Foster Pedley. John, a very warm welcome to you. So considering the recent matric results, how well equipped do you believe the class of 2024? 24 is? There are so many different demands in higher education these days.
There are. Look, I think there are some topics, STEM topics, etc., which have fallen, which we need to do more of, and they are really important for the development of South Africa. But we have such a challenge in South Africa. You know, of 100 people who start school, only 5 get a degree level qualification within 6 years of leaving school, and only 15% ultimately get tertiary education. You look at 55-60% or more of the targets in other countries, so we're way behind. And the other thing that we're really struggling with is that less than 10% of African universities offer comprehensive digital curricula, and 89% of African employers need AI and big data skills, and 88%, according to our World Economic Forum, require technological literacy. So there's a big gap. And so there is a serious challenge we have to ask. And then, are people coming out of school actually ready to work? Because they go to university, and when they enter jobs, what do they know about the workplace and all the soft and other skills and thinking and decision-making skills that are becoming increasingly important in the workplace?
John, let's talk about closing that gap in just a moment. But that figure of 5% that you mentioned is concerning, because these are the people, or this is the cohort, that in future need to make considered decisions about the future of that country. And what I'm hearing from you is that pool is diminishing.
Well, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, in the past in South Africa, a lot of people were really quite comfortable that people weren't highly unemployed because they became the labor, you know, to dig things out of mine, and other people get very rich. That's all needs to change. But we have a legacy of that, and we have an education system that in itself is not transformed to meet the economy. And while we can celebrate the sort of reasonably high matric results, nonetheless, we haven't got a high proportion of people who actually really got university entrance. So what we need to do is think again, what does South Africa need? Are we going to be a mining economy with lots of labor, you know, without qualifications? Or are we going to become like Vietnam, Korea, and other places, a much more technically evolved environment for which we need to dedicate ourselves to build skills? And the trouble is, so many people are excluded by poor education and finance. They're not excluded because they're not intelligent, because we often confuse education with intelligence. Just because you're educated doesn't mean you're gifted with enormous intelligence. You may be, good for you. And just because you don't get education doesn't mean you're not intelligent. In fact, my experience is the opposite of true. We've got a very intelligent mass of people in South Africa to whom we have to, as a public good, give really good education if we're going to grow the country.
So let's agree that we're not in the future going to be a mining economy. We need to pivot as far as that's concerned. So the current curriculum needs to change in order to address the skills required for today's rapidly evolving job market. You talk about closing the gap. Where does the focus need to be?
Well, I think in terms of the three A's. Firstly, you've got to get mass access to quality education. We're far from that, and that's a national priority. How can you even dream of building South Africa if you don't get people access to education? There's plenty of research to show not only are countries more prosperous, people are more prosperous, but also people are happier on multiple levels if they get access to education. The second A is appropriateness. Are we giving the appropriate skills? And I often think we're still stuck in the steam age. You know, we're producing really good people, lawyers, engineers, you know, accountants, and et cetera, doctors, all of whom are really important. But not all of those are the rainmakers of an economy. You've got to get the entrepreneurs and people with high tech skills out as well. And the third A is application. It's all very well knowing something about something, but do you know how to use it? It's a bit like you go to uni and you say, well, I want to be an artist. So you study the history of art, or you study techniques of art. If you don't apply them, you know nothing. You've got to apply and apply and apply. And that's what's missing in our curriculum and the way we approach education.
Let me pick you up on the second A, which is appropriate. How do we pivot to become more appropriate in acquiring at speed the skills that you're talking about?
Well, the first thing we do is we look at the universities, and everyone says, well, let's transform the universities. But the truth is, the universities are full of really good people. But if I had to think about decolonizing the syllabus, it's not the actual syllabus that needs decolonizing only. It's actually the nature of the institutions, which are quite often almost a parody of these large brick institutions of education as you saw in the Western world. We need something very, very different from that. So to do that, you need to change the nature of education. The universities are not able to supply the people we need for the economy. That's absolutely clear. They're not supplying them, the jobs aren't there, and they're not giving enough of the right skills in the economy. So we have to think, what else? TVETs, we need to do industry and TVETs collaborations, partnerships, and we have to align the TVETs to critical industries and make sure the governance of those is dragged away from something that is not, you know, focused on national good, but on personal interests in some cases, I feel sometimes. And then the next thing we have to do is think of what alternative forms of education we've got. Now, we need to get a lot more broadband across the country, and we need to get people able to access really good international education, which is available everywhere, you know, whether it's online through Khan Academy and Difference or edX or through Harvard or Stanford or MIT or international universities emerging in India and China and Asia now, all of whom have phenomenal syllabi and ways of learning, often enabled by rapidly advancing AI techniques, which can support students, who can provide sort of virtual professors, which are very effective. I was at a conference in London where I was blown away by what I saw the Southeast Asian universities doing here, which we can copy. And we can think about how we can get access to education, not through the current institutions only. We're not here to protect them. We're here to protect and build a country which needs really good education by any means we can get it to them.
Just a final one in conclusion. Do you think the private sector is applying enough pressure in this regard, given that it has an important invested interest?
Well, I think the private sector, we often talk about the difference between private and public sector. I mean, we are deeply intertwined. I mean, the ideal is that the public sector provides the capability for the private businesses to provide enormous value to people. And it's same with education. So you're seeing a number of private providers coming into the system who are really working. The private sector in terms of business applying pressure on government, well, they're trying to, but we've seen what's happened in the past with governments, and I really hope the government of national unity will create a different framework for this. But of course we do. It's not just pushing government. That may work. We've also got to provide alternatives ourselves through our collaborations, and quite often to help government. Government is underfunded. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be, but it's also underskilled, and that is shouldn't be either. But we need to take that as a reality, and how do we upskill government as well and support them? And that means we need clear governance, not just cadre deployment for the sake of political control. We have to think of national interests, thriving populations. How do we make that happen, and how do we do it first? So I absolutely think that the public and private sector have roles to play together, but the private sector needs to be more energetic and more entrepreneurial in how it brings education to people, both within the companies and all the way through the, from primary all the way through to tertiary.
Thank you very much indeed for that assessment. The Dean of the Henley Business School, John Foster Pedley, thank you very much.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.